Hello again, Gooners. Not sure if you can hear me. I think you can. Guess what? Drop points. Yeah, it's not good news, is it? For 2023. And while I'm at it, let me say happy 2023. Let's hope it's a successful one for Arsenal based on the performance the other night. Some doubters are coming out of the closet. They've been stuck there for a while. But now they've got reasons to not be cheerful. I'm not sure I share their sentiment if that's how they feel. Because, quite honestly, against Newcastle, and let's face it, it's not all about one match, is it? Marathon, not sprint, as they say. It's certainly not all about one match. So we got to put things into perspective when you really think about it. And have I spent a lot of time thinking about it? You probably think no, because you haven't done a podcast for quite a while. I was a bit shocked when I saw the last one was Arsenal versus Leeds. But enough about that. What about the actual game itself against Newcastle? Well, it will be known as the scandalous penalty claim match. There were two supposed scandalous penalty claims. Personally, obviously, I'm on the side of Arsenal, but couldn't really see that they were penalties. There were, where I was watching, Ian Wright was in the studio. He was trying to pretend that these were actual legitimate penalty claims. I think one, there was a bit of holding going on in a box, and Gabriel seemed to get hauled down, but he went down a bit too easily, and that's something you've got to guard against. If you keep trying to look for penalties, referees are not going to give it. There was some physical contact, it's true. There was a handball. I'm not sure which Newcastle player handled, but it certainly looked accidental. There's nothing to be gained by the handball. Or was there? You could say the ball was going across the box. But it seemed that the Newcastle player was trying desperately to get his hands out of the way. So me personally, I wouldn't have given either of those two. I would not have said there were penalties. But although I say all of that, I would also like to add that I'm still a fan of Mikel Arteta. I was at the very beginning of this process. And I feel he is building a siege mentality at the club. And this post-match outburst about scandalous penalties really helps me to believe that he's building some mental resilience. The only thing that worries me is Arteta, if he comes out and says things like this, he may face disciplinary action from the FA. Obviously, he's not always in his technical area. I could relate to that. In my brief spell of management, I was rarely in my technical area. That might have been because sometimes I had to run the line, which I didn't particularly like doing. But anyway, I think I just like his style, probably because I like to think I was similar. I think I did a lot of psychology, sports psychology, and I hoped that it would actually work sometimes. And I think it did. But Arteta, obviously, fully professional and doing it at a much, much higher level than I did, a lot lower down in the pyramid. Anyway, as I said, I'm a bit worried about the possibility of disciplinary action. The truth is, of course, he was right, Arteta, about some refereeing decisions, I suppose. Too many yellow cards. Wasn't that physical a game. I have gone on record on thelosecannon.co.uk as saying that basically he was dishing out these cards, a bit like confetti at a wedding. However, he did get the major decisions right. And it wasn't as physical as, say, for example, yesteryear when Arsenal used to play against the Orcs, Stoke City. And, of course, one nominee for Orc candidature would be the ex-Spud right-back Trippier. But he doesn't play like an Orc, let's be honest. So I felt watching the game, I felt Newcastle deserved their draw. And they looked quite dangerous on the break. There was one moment when Tomiyasu came on as a substitute, had to clear up the danger. When it was a one-on-one, he came out of nowhere. I was very impressed with Tomiyasu, given that he wasn't on the field that long. Going back to Arteta and his comments, I think he deserves a lot of credit for publicly stating how proud he is of the team. He kept on repeating that over and over again. He was asked the question, did Arsenal drop points? He didn't want to answer that. And I understand why he didn't want to answer it. It's because it's negative vocabulary, negative language. And he doesn't want to engage with that. And I think that was really clever because, again, it shows Arteta's got a mastery of psychology. Newcastle, as I said, deserved the points. And some people commented, like Alan Shearer, that really Arteta should be a bit more gracious. He should give credit to the opposition. He didn't want to do that. He just wanted to talk about his team. I don't see anything wrong with that. Meanwhile, up front, I think those doubters, those people that said Eddie Nketiah can't cut the mustard, need to start looking again, because he went quite close to scoring. Had it not been for Nick Pope's excellent form in the Newcastle goal, I think it would have been 1-0 to Arsenal. And Nketiah's low shot saved by Pope. And I think the other thing that worked as far as Newcastle were concerned, I know not everyone wants to talk about Newcastle, but the other thing that worked from their perspective was the fact that they doubled up on Saka, and one of the players came out afterwards and admitted that. It almost looked like they quadrupled up on Saka at times. There were so many Newcastle players surrounding him. And unless Saka can thread balls into the box, and I think he did to some extent, it's not going to be necessarily a successful day for Arsenal. And they were also pretty good down the other flank. I wouldn't say Trippier totally nullified Martinez, but he made his life quite difficult. Martinez had to keep coming inside and passing instead of getting the ball in the box. So I think Newcastle basically did a job, and they deserved their point. So, that's my review of the most recent game. Before that, of course, it was a 4-2 win at Brighton. And Nketiah scoring that on that particular occasion. Martinelli as well. People called it a grandstand finish. Well, it wasn't quite, because Arsenal had a 2-goal advantage for quite a lot of it. But then again, you know, it was just really, it was just a case of seeing out that game, even though Arsenal had a 2-goal lead. But of course, it's hard when you're at the top. Before that, a 3-1 win against West Ham, not at West Ham. And again, Nketiah scoring, phenomenal work rate, making up for the absence of Jesus. Obviously, that was really upsetting to hear that he's going to be out for a considerable time. I've read various stories saying that he might come back a bit sooner than expected, but I wouldn't believe those stories too much. On the transfer front, what can we say on the transfer front? Not a lot at this stage. I'm trying to think of his name. The guy in the Ukrainian player, Mukhtar, is it? Some people say he will join, but the money we've been talking about is pretty phenomenal. So I personally have my doubts. Le Grove claim it's definitely going to happen, because there's been a lot of noise about this potential deal. And yeah, I do agree with that. I do agree that usually nowadays when Arsenal are linked to a player for a long time, Mudryk, yeah, is the name. They've been linked to him for quite some time. So it does sound like a deal will happen, but I'll believe it when I see it. There's also some talk that Arsenal will raise some money, £70 million. In fact, it's a loan. But they're not actually supposed to use that money for transfers. So that makes you think that deal won't, in fact, necessarily happen. I don't really see a lot wrong with the team as it is, even though, we don't like to say it, do we? We don't like to admit it. But it did, in a sense, feel like drop points, because Arsenal have had a 100% home record until the arrival of Newcastle. So clearly it feels like drop points. It doesn't matter what we say in terms of trying to keep things positive. So do Arsenal need a Mudryk, or do they need a Smith Rowe to come back fit? I think the answer is Smith Rowe, really. Bringing in new players is always a risky business. Because many, many years ago, I don't know how many listeners will remember this, but Newcastle were actually top of the table. Their manager was Kevin Keegan at the time. He brought in Asprilla, top quality striker, forward slash winger. Asprilla was a fantastic player. But for some reason, Newcastle's title challenge, and they were quite a few points clear at the top, their title challenge began to falter, and it was hard to figure out why. Whereas Manchester United, I don't think they bought anybody in the January transfer window. They went on to win the title. So it's one of those situations where you've got to be really careful who you bring in. And I think I'll use that to move on to... should I move on to a little bit while I remember the promised FPL, Fantasy Premier League tips? Well, unsurprisingly, my tip is a guy playing for Brighton. Everyone calls him Mitoma. I believe it's Mitoma because you don't emphasize the second for the last syllable in Japanese. So, Mitoma is my tip. He's very cheap. He's 4.9 million, I think. Unless he's gone up. If you want to check prices going up and down, the website to do that I'd recommend is Football Fallout. I am moving up my league table, so you'll be pleased to note that. And teams that you might want to look out for are the following. Brentford have got an easy run of fixtures, the next three, Bournemouth, Leeds and Southampton. Other teams, Leeds, they've got Villa, Brentford, Forest. Villa, next easiest. They've got Leeds at home, Southampton away, Leicester at home. I don't think Leicester at home is particularly easy, and neither do the team there. But the other two, relatively easy. So is this a time to bring in Ivan Toney? I'm not sure, because he did miss the last game. But Brentford are able to score plenty of goals, that's for sure. So there is that to bear in mind. The other thing to bear in mind is double game weeks, because I messed up, to tell the truth. I really messed up the other week because, in fact, this week, because I didn't realise that Fulham and Chelsea are playing an extra game. So that kind of thing can really... Give certain people an advantage. So these double game weeks, you've got to keep an eye out for. There will be double game weeks for Manchester City coming up very, very shortly. So watch out for that. Who else? I think Manchester City would be the team I would try to recruit players from. Obviously, that doesn't sound very, very good from an Arsenal perspective. But Fantasy Football Scout are probably the best website for this kind of information. So I'll give you the latest information, which is not that recent, to be honest, because it goes back before the World Cup. So obviously this game week, 19, is a double game week. And then the following one is also going to be a double game week. So double game week for game week 20, City and Spurs. Spurs, obviously, playing against Arsenal, and Manchester City away. So lots of tipsters are saying, keep away from Spurs, really. Can't moan about that. Obviously, Kane doesn't seem to be in tremendous form right now. Let's hope that continues. Manchester City, meanwhile, got a couple of... what is a tuple? I don't know. But they've got a couple of tough games as well. Man U away and Spurs at home. However, this double game week really depends on how the FA Cup goes. So don't steam straight in and start buying City and Spurs players, because if they get involved in an FA Cup third round replay, it means it will not be a double game week after all. A double game week that does seem very likely to happen is game week 23. And this is where Arsenal are getting two games, Brentford at home and City at home. So pretty tough games, especially the way Brentford are playing. And obviously City are always going to be difficult. City's home game is against Villa, and obviously Arsenal away. So Yeah, as far as what's the chances of those two teams, City and Spurs, not drawing their FA Cup games, quite hard to gauge. And should look at who they're playing against. Because to tell the truth, can't remember. I do know that Arsenal have got Oxford United away, and that's not going to be particularly easy, we might think so. Because Arsenal's recent form in the FA Cup hasn't been particularly good, mainly because I think Arsenal just don't put out their best teams. I think everybody would agree with that. So, there is that aspect. Will he play Fabio Vieira? He's not really been getting a look in. Gary Neville, the pundit, commented saying that that Mikel Arteta doesn't trust Vieira for these relatively big games. It's quite hard to say, do I agree with that or not? To tell the truth, I do like Vieira, but I don't think he's necessarily ready for a full season, which of course he's not getting. I don't think he's ready for it right now. So he's a bit lightweight. He was accused of that from the start. It's not his fault, it's just his frame. But he'll build up muscle, no doubt. And I'm not convinced he's got everything, he's got the full package of what it takes to play regular football in the Premier League. So I can totally see the reason why Arteta is reticent to use him. While I'm talking, I'm still looking for who are Spurs playing in the FA Cup? Who cares, you might answer. But I care because only what's the likelihood of them drawing? Manchester City have got Chelsea, but it's at City. So you'd think they'd get through that. And Spurs have got Portsmouth. So in answer to my own question, I don't think they're going to draw those games. I think they'll get straight through against those teams, even though Portsmouth will give Spurs a decent game, no doubt. You were expecting me to say Chelsea would give City a decent game, but it depends. Chelsea have obviously got the ability to do it, but they're just not necessarily turning it on right now. And that's music to Arsenal fans' ears. But yeah, Gary Neville was quite critical of Arteta's reluctance to use Fabio Vieira. So yeah, if you've got anything to say on that, I would certainly be interested to hear it. He does say some ridiculous things, though, Gary Neville. I think he's an excellent pundit, but he seems to believe that Manchester United have got a better chance of winning the league than Arsenal because he mentioned Rashford's form. And I think defensively they're looking stronger. But he said, this is what really got me. He said, they're getting stronger. I think they've got a lot more players than Arsenal. I found that very hard to take. He said United have got four centre backs, much of a muchness, but they've got that strength in depth. And then, so he's saying that Arsenal don't have that. If a centre back gets injured, he thinks there's no plan B. Well, then clearly he doesn't know Tomiyasu can fill in there, and obviously Ben White. Initially, he was a centre-back at Arsenal. So he's just filling in at right-back, if anything. So I think Gary Neville underestimates the strength of Arsenal's squad. So, yeah, that'll be it for this particular podcast. Sorry I've been away so long, but obviously the World Cup was the main reason. I'm trying to figure out how to end this now. But should I end with some music, the same old music? Only if it plays. Yeah, you can probably hear it in the background now. So yeah, that's all got time for. I thought I'd talk for 15 minutes. It's been nearly 20. Hopefully nobody's fallen asleep during that time. And of course, if you want to appear on the podcast, just let me know and I can set you up with all the login details and so on. So until the next time, adios, amigos.